Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Welcome to Experience Focused Leaders. I'm delighted to introduce you to Nicole Alwino, co-founder, CEO, and now chairwoman of FirstUp. Nicole pioneered the market for digital employee experience, scaling this AI-first SaaS company to hundreds of millions in ARR, 25% EBITDA margins, and a global reach over 20 million employees across 100 countries. Nicole, welcome to the pod.
Alex, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So these stats that I brought up, what did I miss anything? Are there more new stats? Is it now like more and more? Like this is a remarkable story of startup to supporting some of the largest companies in the world and how they connect to their people.
Yeah, and I think that's the main point. Sometimes jokes say world domination, we're never ever done, but really it is about finding an important problem and a problem that nobody else is solving really well. And I'm super passionate, obviously, about people first leadership and companies. And I often tell other CEOs, you realize nothing happens in your company without all of your people aligned and engaged and executing the strategy. And so that's something that I've been passionate about. And it's been pretty incredible to see some of the world's largest companies use our technology to meaningfully connect and engage their people.
Well, I love your journey. And I personally can resonate very much with it, because what you co-founded FirstUp back when I was at SuccessFactors, also working on, you know, engaging employees and building high performance organizations. And we found this huge gap between the strategy that the CEO and the organization has and the ability to fill the gap with the execution of that strategy. And guess what? One of the biggest bottlenecks was people just didn't understand what the strategy was. Couldn't, you know, break it down in a way that was meaningful to them. It wasn't reinforced consistently enough. And, you know, we were very fortunate to build a, you know, public company, exited to SAP on that premise alone, but we didn't get into the nitty gritty of the communications. And we were focusing much more on kind of alignment and, you know, more classical HR functions. You're unlocking a whole new area within HR for software. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I think the big aha for us and the place where we really found product market fit was focusing on this internal communications person, but really looking at the office of the chief communications officer. Mm-hmm. And if you go back a decade ago, we kind of saw this opportunity to really do two things. I think one, to connect with frontline workers. And I think that's something that big tech, no offense to SAP, but if you look, especially a decade ago, no one was thinking mobile first, and no one was really focused on that part of the workforce, which, by the way, 80% of the world's workforce is on the front line. And those stats, and especially now with AI, the people who are in healthcare, handling service needs, those types of jobs are not going to go away. So we said, look, there's
so just let's humanize for our audience. Like let's talk about some, what are some of these job descriptions? This is retail.
This is retail.
Frontline financial services, right?
This is frontline financial. This is hospitality. This is manufacturing. This is healthcare. And I think that those are actually those are the our biggest industries. And I think also that problem is the most acute because a lot of companies before us were literally trying to talk to their employees through layers and layers of managers and telephone, which we all know how well that works. Some people are, still printing up pieces of paper and putting them on a bulletin board for in a break room. Again, we can see how well that works. So we just have some very,
We see
very
some people saving these pieces of paper as a PDF and thinking that is going to somehow
correct.
magically delight and
Correct.
engage their employees across the screen. That sounds
Absolutely.
optimistic, I think, a lot of time here.
Correct. And then you have people, I mean, in some parts of home health care, people don't even meet there. There's not a, they don't meet anyone, and they're meant to be trained, onboarded, engaged, and there's really just no way to do that unless you bring technology into the mix and something that can be personalized to the employee. And so what we saw, one, especially with this group of employees, they were completely disconnected and had access really to nothing. And then two, we looked at what we was happening in our consumer life. So at that point, everyone had a mobile phone. We started getting things that were hyper personalized to us. Think about the new Nikes you're buying, and you're looking at them, and you don't transact, and then you start getting a lovely little beautiful email telling you that you have free shipping, and something comes to your mobile phone and gives you another offer, and eventually you buy the Nikes, and we learn about you, and Nike continues to personalize an experience to build that relationship. We said there's nothing like that in the world of employee experience, and if we think about how critically important for any company's success, they must connect with their people. That's a foundation. And we said there's a huge opportunity to basically think about delivering a consumer type experience that we do on the marketing side of the house with our people, and kind of take that principle as well as that focus on solving that frontline worker problem.
So you're the marriage of marketing superpowers with employees, and particularly not just any employees, but employees where historically they have not been reached, and because quote
Hard to
unquote
reach.
front hard to reach or hard to reach, and because frontline is what frontline means is they're customer facing oftentimes, right? And when you're doing your satisfaction survey, right? If that employee has no idea what's going on, not
Correct.
motivated, not aligned, guess what? Like
Correct.
you're leaving a lot of ifs on the quality of the customer experience
Absolutely. And
from them,
anyone
right?
from Yeah. And it's, and again, this is a hard problem. Like, why solve a problem if it's not very hard? But if you think about like Hilton and Hyatt and Rosewood, so they're customers. And if you think about their experience, the client experience, the guest experience, it really is about the connection that you're having with the person who's checking you in, or with that housekeeper, or with the person who's working in food and beverage. And for those types of brands, their revenue and growth is driven by the guest experience they can deliver, which is directly tied to that employee experience, how the employees feel, and then how can they can exude that. And so, that's just one example. And again, you go to retail, Tesco, another right big customer. This is exactly how you're trying to get repeat traffic, same source sales, and you have to be able to connect and engage your people. Everything from giving them, I would call more of the board, what they need to know from an operational standpoint, safety issues. Here's, something we need to swap out, to here's some more culture building types of activities that makes them want to stay and perform to their best.
So if we think about modern marketing, right, we think it's let's say outside of B2B or
Like more oh, I think I
Surround sound now.
more, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Technicolor, full
Modern
surround sound.
marketing without technical issues delivers a like a personalized experience across channels, across different times in the customer journey. When we think of employee experience historically, it's more like we have one size fits all portal. We have one size fits all, quote, non, downloadable brochure, employee brochure, employee guide, da da da. And they're typically stuck in one format in one place with one login. And it seems that you unlock that for that to be actually effective, for that message to get through, you need to have a more open-minded perspective of what kind of that centralized experience could be. Like you could have that centralized space, but to have deeply personalized journeys as well. Can you tell us a little bit of what you had to do to build that out and help who are the people that's got it immediately and then you have to educate on like, hey, that's the future of that's marketing. We can learn from
No, and I think that the first thing is that the good news is no one, everyone kind of hated their current form of portal if they had one. So there, no one's going to argue and say, especially a decade ago when we started and I was out there, I call it selling the dream. No one's going to argue and say, oh, no, I love this,
I love our
awful
intranet.
SharePoint intranet with my, a thousand links to try to get to a place and, stale content that takes me 8 hours to upload something. So there was no denying that there was a problem. There was also no denying that there was no good way for any of these companies to reach that frontline worker, whether that person was driving a truck, interacting with a patient or a guest, working on a manufacturing line. So that was an acute problem. And then I think that the beauty of all of it was, especially for the internal communications function, there wasn't a platform for them. There was really no technology. And if I looked at the corollary of what Marketo unlocked for marketing, what Workday First or unlocked SuccessFactors unlocked for HR, what Salesforce unlocked for sales, and if you think about how those functions were changed when you had a technology where you could manage all of your communications, you could measure everything. And so it was really finding a part of but frankly, the last member of the C-suite that didn't have their own platform where they could pr really prove success and prove and say, just like marketers, I'm running a communication campaign, whether it's CEO strategy, right? It's M&A, it's safety, and say, here's actually, I can actually prove the results of this campaign. Let's take safety, and I can look factory by factory, which people have actually engaged with the safety content. They've in somehow, and then no surprise, we can correlate to safety incidents and the ones who have actually taken the training, and we can see their readership, their engagement with those campaigns, and that we could see that there was were no safety incidents or incidents went down. And so it's basically kind of being able to prove campaigns work. We know campaigns work from politics to marketing, but it's just been a different mindset to think about it in the context of employee communications.
So if we talk about this title of Chief Communications Officer, so some organizations they tend to be more internally focused. We were chatting the other day. Some of them have a combination of like, well, they're only PR, they may support investor relations, ESG communications, stakeholders, government affairs, and internal. So in some cases, like PR, obviously they know they have their closer to marketing, they're measuring this. Investor is a bit of, does I think in most organizations does think about educating and onboarding and attracting new investors. So did you find that folks that had this external and internal hat were some of your earlier adopters and some of the faster innovators, or is it like, hey, I have a total ownership on internal is lagging, and Nicole solved that for us?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I think the people who got the biggest vision first were the companies where internal communications or employee communications rolls up to marketing, because that was a no-brainer. They got it, right?
You didn't have to convince them. They're like, this is silly.
They we just do make this so here. Much.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Those people are like, oh, let me try to use my customer marketing tools for internal, and it just doesn't work. It never works.
So they tried to use Marketo, and there was like,
yeah,
that
just never works. Salesforce doesn't
work. It's
hard
to use Marketo even for other,
correct.
Let's not go there. Marketo, like, it's hard enough for marketing, wasn't built for this. Okay. Got it. So that's, so that was initial instinct. You had to overcome that tendency, and then they were like, okay, we're ready for you now.
But then, for chief communications, for them, when you, it's just almost like you get to the right person, and they said it's a no brainer. And I think like our first customers who are still customers today, Boeing and Dow and Hilton, it was really about, you have no good way to connect to the majority of your workforce. Mm. And A, that's just not okay from more of a tech equity standpoint or from a culture standpoint. And also, there's no way that you can move this workforce ahead without that connection. So that was the one. And I'll tell you a story. Boeing, it was their CCO several CCOs ago, and I sat down, his name was Tom, and I said, Tom, you have a massive disconnect here. How can you possibly, you're the owner with the CEO of culture and of strategy. And he said, you're right. Our people who are on the front line building our planes, they are the culture. They are this company. And they're the most disconnected from everything we're doing in corporate. And that's not okay. And so some of it was this, there's a fundamental problem.
Yeah,
that's a true business problem, right? Mm-hmm. If you can't connect with the majority of your workforce, how are you going to activate them?
It's called Soviet Union. I grew up there.
See, there we go. That's one way. That's one solution. Yeah.
They had a saying, basically, which was like actually classical, like which would attracted me to employee communications. But
yeah.
I really found that there was somebody, I was too young to really get it, but like somebody told it to me, that there was this motto that if you didn't steal anything, you didn't work hard enough. And can you imagine that level of disconnect, right? And so that's sort of one place where it was, very top down,
right?
Not aligned, and kind of not a lot of trust in the system. And so and I think large bureaucracies basically have maybe smaller versions of that, but they eventually at certain scale, you run into organizational communication challenges, right?
Yeah, no, it's just inevitable. And especially now with Gen Z, I mean, Gen Z is going to be 30% of the workforce by 2030. Yeah. They talk about a group of individuals who they've just grown up in a completely different way. They're digital first. They're not reading emails and long form anything, right? They also have a much more collaborative, bottoms up type of, I want to be connected and part of something. So there are just a lot of macro forces that helped us, just as far as the old way, that the top down Soviet dictatorship, can work in a few certain circumstances or situations. I think less and less, and also it's just harder and harder to really get the attention of your people, to get them to do.
What the
company needs, and also so they feel good about what they're contributing, and they have meaning and purpose in their work.
Well, you brought up Gen Z, so let's double click on that a little bit, because I think it's fascinating that we have in our world with employee benefits, engagement, and communications. Mm-hmm. One of the core themes that everybody realizes is that you actually have a workforce with many generations at the same time, and you need to roll out a similar message, but obviously different people will want to engage with that differently. And so it's not that you can completely rip and replace everything for the, 50 plus year old generation
Right.
that's set in kind of digital slash analogy way. You still
Yeah.
want to engage them. Probably you there are a lot of your senior leaders. You want to help them, make a like a meaningful transition. But if you want to keep your job, you want to make sure they're okay with the communications.
Yeah.
And that's in communications and HR. Sometimes a lot of there's a lot of risk in not pleasing the leadership there. And at the same time, you have this Gen Z issue, right? And then even the same person, what be they Gen Z or 50 plus year old exec, if they really care about something like and want to
Yeah.
go deeply, they may want to go drill into it, old fashioned way. And then
Yeah.
they may so there's also individual learning styles amongst the generational learning styles. Some people are visual, some people are auditory, some
Right.
are collaborative, some linear, boom, 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 right? So that is I found this to be super fascinating problem, and I think you dealing with it, right? Like, because you can't just say rip out everything that we've always done
Yeah.
completely and like start from scratch with Gen Z to begin with, because we're not running a startup that serves other startups and technical people at other startups, which is like the classical Silicon
Yeah.
Valley disruption formula. So what are your thoughts on this, and what have you learned of supporting different generations, but also different learning styles?
Yeah, no, and it's something that it's always been a kind of a core tenet to what we've done in our ethos. It's
Yeah.
you need to meet people where they are.
Right.
Where they are physically, digitally, where they are, their language, their context, their stage of career, their stage of life. And so it just goes to this notion of we must provide a personalized, I talk about it as a hyper personalized experience, even for something, and benefits is a great example. You have a range, and several of our companies have 3 generations of workers. And they need something very differently just from a benefit standpoint and all those different life stages. And so instead of just plopping and saying, here's our 100-page benefits guide, have at it, and let me just continue to spam you in emails that you need to sign up, let's take an opportunity to really be able to segment and provide different types of communications and experiences and reminders about different types of benefits. I mean, you will know this more than anyone. I think that the stat is sometimes up to 80% of benefits can go unused just because people don't know that they exist. And it's not because, I think that's a communication problem. It's all about getting the right information to the right person at the right time to take advantage of that benefit and being able to push things to people and understand where and how they like to engage. And that's part of the AI wrapper that we have to be able to really understand people's preferences. And so we can find a way to, we can reach and engage people, kind of better than anyone else. And then it's what do we need to give them in that moment that really is what they need, whether it's, a maternity paternity benefit, whether it's a bereavement benefit, whether it's a mental health benefit, that those things, yes, there's awareness, and then in a certain moment, you actually need to be able to get that information.
Yeah, I think it's really beautiful if we because we were discussing earlier that you almost have two fundamental roles, right? Like one is, really precise, personalized, relevant information. And then once you land into that, then there is also like, oh, okay, well, I get this personalized information, but is it told, is the story around it in a way that I can actually also
Correct.
connect with? And so that's what we're kind of we focused on and relate to. And I love, like, I think we need more people that could say, hey, let me deliver this story to you.
Right.
And then that's within this framework, within, broader ecosystem of everything that people already know how to go to. And then later, and then further on, drive this behavioral change by actually, oh, okay, so this is now it's relevant. Let me dig into that a little bit. Let me understand it. Let me learn something new. Let me change a behavior. And I think that that's sort of this combo that is really powerful. to bring to the world. So I love what you're doing, and I'm a huge, huge fan of the platform that you've built. What were the challenges in building this, right? Like the, you know, we've talked a little bit about who were the early adopters, who, you know, you're working with very large organizations, which sounds impressive, but you know, those of us that have tried to do it know that it's not trivial.
Yeah, no, look, what I was just chuckling. One of the books that I read and reread is The Hard Things About Hard Things from Ben Horowitz. So it's just kind of all of the crazy things that you can't imagine that actually do happen, and you just power through. So look, I think part of the we wanted to sell to big customers. We figured that out early on, which is obviously huge for a SaaS company. The other side of that is these
Because you don't
customers.
have titles with chief communications officer in a 200 person company, right? Like over a 500
Yeah,
person company.
no. And it's not an acute problem, right? If you have a 200 person company, you can get by with Slack and with, some, it's a different size problem, even when you hit, a 4,000 employee workforce that has people all over the world, that has people in different types of roles that really, really need vastly different types of communication and experiences. So, I think that, that's probably where the problem starts. And the more, heterogeneous your employee base is, the more geographically diverse, that's when you really start to notice it. You look at a company with 15,000, 20,000, 50,000, 300,000 people, and you just think about all of those different messages, information, strategy, team changes, then it just becomes, oh my goodness, this is too much. If we don't figure out how to drive signal through the noise, part of the personalization and relevancy, we're just overwhelming all of our people, right? And then you
Because
go
it's not
back
like
to
we're not overwhelmed by our phones already. Like we got
correct,
like, you know,
correct.
and that's at
Yeah.
least easier to digest.
Right. So look, it's the big companies, and the big companies, when it's a problem, and we had the when this is the way that companies are sending out CEO messages and CEO videos and updates on organizational changes, there is no room for error, for failure, for things like that. So, like to say, in the early days, I would get the texts from the customers.
And the customers were, you said UK, so this was like
Oh
you're on the
yeah, we're
West
in the
Coast
UK.
and
We're
you're
in,
serving
yeah.
Tesco, and you know, so yeah, you're on.
I'm on, always on. So it was just from a personal standpoint over the years when we were able to, when we were, just building up the different functions and becoming much more mature, that, of course, I always believe as a leader and as a founder, I want to have and do have personal connections with our customers. And I love hearing the good, bad, and the ugly. And also we need to have, first of all, we need to have no problems. There's never software that doesn't have any bugs or anything. But those were some fun challenges and, growing opportunities.
And what was it like to sell both to the communications officers, but also obviously this is an HR, HR centric use case. I've had the fun and the challenge of selling to HR as well, and I think that was probably not like there was a lot of things going on. There's a lot of tools. The teams generally weren't as skilled at buying technology. And so, you know, we had to learn to enable champions. So it's kind of gave me an idea for another business to actually like, how do you enable champions more effectively? Because it was a big challenge in selling to HR, which normally doesn't, you know, buy as many technology things as other parts of the organization. So what was your take and what did you learn and how did you adapt in having multiple stakeholders, not just chief communications officers?
Yeah, no, and that's a good point. So this function of internal communications, about 40% does roll up to a CHRO. So it's for us, it was kind of the CHRO, the CCO, the CIO, especially more and more, came in. And so it's, how do you sell to that body? And then ultimately, there was a CFO, a CEO type of approval, or especially for some CEOs, this was their personal, their initiative. Tesco's CEO, for example, it was something that he wanted to do. Ken Murphy said, I want to be able to directly connect with colleagues. We've never had a way to do this. I want a meaningful two-way interaction. And I know the importance of empowering my people to drive, to ultimately drive business results. And so that was something that, he ended up being part of the buying committee and ultimately saying, that this is who I want to partner with. So I always like to say, "Word, this should be a CEO platform. It's a CEO problem, 100% a CEO problem." And I think COVID showed us that better than anything else. But to your point, it's the, and now there's just so much noise in the system, right? With anything around people and performance and efficiency, productivity, any of those words. And so it is, how do I find the champion in communications or HR that can really understand? And to your point, we do a ton of enablement, helping build business cases, helping build some ROI calculators that a CFO can understand, really building enablement that they can give their CIO, who's now a huge stakeholder. Often, sometimes they've taken over the process. And so
Because you're
it's really,
basically delivering an intranet, and you're a leader in the Gartner's latest intranet
yeah.
quadrant, and
The
so
word
that
everyone loves, the internet is dead. Long live the
yeah,
internet.
long live the intranet. So, and but intranet historically is very much the IT domain,
Yeah,
right? So that.
and it's interesting. This day and age, what I've seen, especially in the large companies, it's kind of two things. The CIO just has more and more power as far as how am I going to consolidate my technology and make things more efficient. One, there's a cost-cutting exercise. That's just the reality. And companies did overspend in SaaS and during COVID. So there's how do I make everything efficient? And so now you throw in AI and having to allocate there. And from a that I've seen that the CEOs that are forward-looking and work really closely with their CIOs, especially around employees, it's how do we just deliver this phenomenal employee experience from pre-hire to retire that does guide them through, that does help them have a great experience and stay longer and help us deliver on our top and bottom line results. And so some CIOs at big, they're saying, okay, I want to build part of it and I have a roadmap. Some of it's going to be something that I build. Then I'm going to go pick kind of best in class SaaS solutions to plug in. That's kind of one approach. And so we've had to be open and API first and very nimble. And we've got some great examples of working closely with CIOs, Tesco's one, Swissport's one, where it's a true partnership with their teams. And so it's like we're helping to accelerate their roadmaps. And then there are others who still have the, I want my portal, I own the portal, I own the tech, and I just need to make sure whether they've said I'm a Microsoft shop, I'm going to streamline on ServiceNow, whatever it might be. It's more of, okay, here's how we can not just
Well,
complement, but really amplify what those, I'd say productivity platforms are doing, because no one has that consumer grade marketing automation type of functionality that you really need to engage all your people meaningfully to get the outcomes you want.
So, this connection to the CEO is really relevant to you. You're a CEO of a company that builds tools. For CEOs, a
Former.
former, right? But you had to live as a founder what you're building, and I think that's an extra. I find it sometimes daunting that I need to think through about my communications, because hey, our company supports communications, and sometimes I like to improvise, and so that's that doesn't. So it's a little bit of an extra challenge. What have you found exciting and challenging in your personal journey in building first up?
Yeah, and I say, I mean, you brought up a point to kind of this notion of drink our own champagne. Using obviously the hardest and the most rewarding thing, I think, as a leader in building a company is people, right? And connecting with them and getting people. I've always said I want people who come to work at First Step, I want this to be the highlight of their career, kind of however long that tenure is. And you know, some people have been at First Step for a decade and some have been there 2 weeks, and it is how do we really connect with them in a meaningful way? You know, we have a purpose-built culture, which people are really inspired by. And, you know, our big mission is just to make work better for every worker. And people do relate to that. And so, you know, I think you've got to have, anytime you can have that mission and purpose as a core, and then be able to help people perform at their best. And whether it's move up, become people leaders, become principal individual contributors, move different roles. You know, we've had someone who started in customer success and moved to product, and someone who is, you know, a former customer running customer success. And so it's just for me, that was always the most rewarding, to help people even be the best versions of themselves, or either be better than they could imagine. And I think that speaks at the core of what we're doing with communication, and really helping people based on that connection perform at their best. So, you know, I think that's the best part. And then, you know, there's always challenges where different people for different stages of companies were a right fit, and at a certain point they're no longer the right fit. And it's, you know, great companies are all about finding the absolute best people for that right moment in time with what the company needs. And, you know,
Because
some
the
people,
company and the mission needs to take precedence over a particular individual
yeah.
at
And I
a
think
point
some
in time.
people wanted all that. Some people are like, Nicole, like I loved a smaller, scrappy, I loved a different size of company.
You're right.
And, you know, now we've gotten too big, and I've realized about myself, I want to be in a smaller place, which is a totally valid understanding. And so my thing is, you know, I want to help guide people throughout that experience. And, you know, it's going to end for everyone at different points in time, but you know, to be able to make that experience as positive and rewarding as possible too.
So, kind of to continue to building on this, we've met, back at Stanford, and the business school's mission is to change lives, change organizations, change the world. I could see that you've taken that and, done this with First Up. What else have you taken from your earlier experiences before you became the CEO? I think, a provocative question would be you started your career, according to LinkedIn, on at Enron, right? And so that is probably an example where things didn't go quite as right as one had hoped. So, to what degree that earlier experience before business school and business school shaped your passion and vision for building First Up?
Yeah, no, look, so I did start my career at Enron. I did structured finance. My bosses went to jail, which is crazy. Actually, I don't know if you know this, Alex. Two of the people who wrote my letters of recommendation for Stanford ended up going to jail. So I was terrified. I obviously didn't know at the time, but it was really hard for me. And I went through a period of, do I even want to stay in business? I love business because I want to change lives, organizations in the world. And that's just been a passion of always innovating and creating impact and making things better. And this experience did cause me to question that a bit. So I had my own personal walkabout for a few months with the backpack in Fiji, New Zealand, and Australia before going back to business school. And at that moment, I said, you know what, I do love building businesses, in part because I would be on a surf trip and write up a little business plan about how they could better package and price their surf packages, or you know,
You
give people
couldn't turn
some.
it off. You couldn't turn
I couldn't help myself.
it
Yeah, when I was trying to, you know, just
You're like, I'm
travel with the
doing a Zen
backpack.
meditation, and I'm like, hey, we could really turn that into a
Correct.
business.
Correct. So when I realized that I can't, this is what I'm really passionate about doing. And for me, I said, I'm not going to work in corporate America again. I'm only going to start companies where I can control the culture and the ethics. So an Enron situation won't happen again. So that's something that's very, a personal, experience and something that I've remained focused on. And so I think kind of fast forward to post Stanford, I started the first company I started was not related at all. It was a spa company. And that's when it really taught me the importance of that frontline worker, right? Everyone we hire, we were hiring estheticians and nurses, and everything that they did, our business relied on how our employees were relating with our customers. And that to me was, oh my goodness, if we there has to be something else here between with technology and at scale, and how do you scale what I was creating culture-wise in these derma lounges? But if you think about, there's a much bigger problem. So I think that experience really taught me or opened my eyes to this frontline worker. And that is the vast majority of the companies. And then it was, how can there be, there needs to be some type of a tech platform. And that's when we kind of found our product market fit with First Up, talking about the kind of mobile first, bringing consumer marketing principles to employees, and realized that from, my little mom and pop business that I had started in the Bay Area, that this huge problem with the biggest companies in the world, and that no one else, big tech, wasn't solving it, and why not us?
Well, it's a great connection point. And since you brought up the spa chapter of your life, I recall the last time we caught up, and I had this observation that like there is this energy that's and like something oozing out of you. And those of you that are watching this on YouTube, check it out. Like, just Nicole is smiling, and it's just like there's a aura, for lack of a better word, that's coming out of you, that is transmitting positive energy, in my like it, the way I would describe it. And it's just a joy to chat with you now and whenever we get a chance to connect. And I wonder what's your secret to that, right? Besides probably having learned some things during your spa years, but I have a feeling this is internal as much as external orientation. Like, and I feel that this like what the one the energy that oozing out for me is like an internal like sparkle. So I find that this is something that I'm drawn to, because I can go sometimes be like in a very like let's get things done and not oozing that out, and that is definitely not an energy that makes me like a fan dad at home, and my kids don't love that energy as much at all. So, and I would imagine that like as a CEO that had to get stuff done, you've got family obligations, so on. You've got a lot on your plate building this mega successful company, but you seem to do this with this grace. So what's the secret behind it?
Oh, we're waiting for the and. No, I think that, look, I think I've said for a long, there's no such thing as balance. There's no work-life balance. There's no, and I'm a big and person. There peace. There are moments of peace. And so whether it's being super present with my kids or making certain trade-offs, like I said early on, I will never travel on one of my boys' birthdays. I have three boys, and so somehow with all of my crazy travel, I just made sure that is something that I is a non-negotiable. Yes, have I missed conferences? Have I dialed in for certain other things? So I think it's just realizing and understanding what's important to you. What are the most important things that are non-negotiables? And realizing that you're not going to be a 10 at everything, especially not on every day, and bringing that into the fold. And I will say that I do meditate every morning. I
Tell
don't know
us
if you know
more.
this.
Tell us more.
Tell us more.
Yes.
Tell us more. I did in college, I studied Japanese and did my study abroad in Tokyo. And I studied the Japanese tea ceremony, which is based on Zen Buddhism. And that's really what kind of got me interested in Eastern philosophy and the premise, this notion, it's called Ichigo Ichie, and it means one moment, one encounter, and it's this moment, like this conversation. We've had many conversations before, but this one, it'll never happen again in the same way, right? Even if we're both wearing the same things, we're both on Zoom, it'll be different. And so the notion of you just have to be present and enjoy the moment. And that was something that really, really stuck with me that I tried to kind of carry through. And however crazy and chaotic things are, kind of appreciate the moment and find these moments of peace.
So I was expecting, on top of that, you were going to say that you do a rich Japanese tea ritual every morning right after
No,
you
I do not.
meditate.
I do not. I do not.
And how have you found that you're able to share that journey and those practices with your colleagues? Because they're, let's say, they're maybe not the norm in a rah-rah world of enterprise sales. But inevitably, I do find that when you go a little deeper, you find that high performers have found a way to balance, and have some sort of meditative or other practice or equivalent. So how have you found that you're translating that to your colleagues? Do you talk about this in your internal company settings? Do you talk about it with customers? Because many of them are trying to create a an work environment where people are present.
Yeah, no, and I think that you said the most important thing. It's talk about it and normalize it. I think that that's part of, leadership now. We have to be authentic. We have to be transparent. And I think that's, especially when we start, we were talking about the Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they need that. And people can tell when it's not. And so, it's always a balance, but I do try to be open and honest with people just around things, challenges and things in personal life. And I do like to bring in humor too and fun. So one of the things that I do, I would do hosting
I'm
customer
happy to steal
dinners.
jokes. I'm happy
No,
to
this
steal
isn't,
some
it's not a
jokes.
joke, but it is a fun thing if you start
Okay.
doing it. So my favorite thing to do with a group of customers or partners is I have a one table conversation and everyone goes around and shares one fun fact. And you can describe your fun fact however you want. It is unbelievable to see the things that people share. And it's something that you would have never known or guessed about them. So you automatically get to, some other deep connection, sometimes random, sometimes hilarious, sometimes very inspirational. But it just creates a deeper level of connection right off the bat, and everyone ends up having a lot of fun with it because some of them get very wacky.
So it's both authentic and removes the sense of transactionality
Yeah,
almost that we
exactly.
sometimes
Exactly.
have in our
Yeah.
culture. Well, Nicole, this has been a lovely learning for me. This was, I said, one of my goals is to learn, to learn how to build a great company and have a smile like yours. But if you had to give advice to, and we'll wrap up on this, but if you had to give advice to Nicole starting out first up, what would be one or two pieces of advice that you'd give to yourself?
Yeah, I would say always trust my instinct, trust my gut. I think I've been doing some work. I think I can look back on the times where I didn't and made decisions that were kind of going against what I knew, and invariably they were, didn't turn out the way I wanted to. So I think that piece, kind of no matter the other influences, and then I think something that one of my favorite kind of mentor friends told me was, "Don't sweat the small stuff." And by the way, it's all small stuff. So I think that notion of whatever you're facing, even though you think it could be the worst, biggest problem or biggest deal ever, with a little perspective, it's actually not. And I think that in those moments of very high highs and low lows, just that the piece of perspective is always helpful.
perspective and equanimity. So it sounds like the Buddhism, the ritual is working. Well, Nicole, where could people find your wisdom and that of First Up if they're corporate communications officers?
Yeah, go. You can find me on LinkedIn and anything, anyone, firststep.io, LinkedIn, all of the channels. You can reach me, Nicole, at firststep.io. But happy to have any conversations, and you can see I'm passionate about this topic and solving a problem that's for, heads of communication, HR, and ultimately CEOs.
Well, it's been a joy to connect with you, and I hope all of our audience that also is like us at Relate to passionate about this will go and find what First Up is up to. And we're excited to be supporting the same ecosystem, thinking about similar issues. So please reach out to First Up team and Nicole if you see opportunities to collaborate. Thank you, Nicole.
Great. Thank you, Alex.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relate2.com, RELYTO.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relate2.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.